Welcome to this week's LagnaPod. We are back in action here. I'm Rob Holbert, one of your co-hosts, along with
Ashley Trice,
Dale Leash,
Tommy Hicks.
The gang is all here. Well, Dale, we started out, I guess, this week is there's a continuation of the ceremonial signing of a lease down in for the new first precinct on the Dolphin Island Parkway.
Yeah,
and this has turned into I guess a heck of a kerfuffle for the Stimson administration and some of the council members. Tell us a little bit about what's going on with all that.
And if it feels at all like this is politically motivated or campaign motivated, a lot of the council members, two of the council members pointed that out as well. So you had an issue where the Councilman CJ Small from District 3 and the mayor were at a signing of a lease for a new first precinct. They're going to move the first precinct from where it is on Virginia and Broad down DIP.
This was last Thursday, correct?
Yeah, on the other side of I-10. This was last Thursday. But pretty much the very next day, I guess, or maybe the Monday before.
It was the next day. It was Friday. Yes.
Bess Rich sent a letter. And this was a press event where they invited the press on Thursday to come out and witness the signing and talk a little bit about the new precinct. And the next day, Fred Richardson, who's running for mayor against Stimson, let us all see through Facebook a letter that Bess Rich had sent to Council President LaVon Manzi, basically saying this is inappropriate. He shouldn't be signing a lease without council approval. It goes against the Zogby Act.
Yeah.
And so on and so forth. And to be fair to Bess, the best that I can be in this situation, the mayor's office never mentioned it was a ceremonial lease. They just said, we're going to sign this lease. They did say that the council would have to approve it before it became finalized, but they never said anything about not actually signing the lease. That came out later with this when this whole kerfuffle started. Well, that all extended into Tuesday's meeting of the city council where even after Bess was told that it was a ceremonial signing and it's not really that big a deal, she kind of doubled down and said, you know, basically, and her and Fred Richards basically like, we wish, you know, why didn't you tell us about it? Why didn't you invite us? You know, we would have liked to have known about this beforehand. And so it's just kind of gone, you know, we've had the issues with the two groups and the power struggle before. This is just seems like, and I mean, Bess even brought up the lawsuit from the previous years. So I think that was really a big part of it. Is it's just this ongoing power struggle. And now, you know, Bess isn't running again. And she basically said that God help us if whoever's elected in District 6 is just a rubber stamp for the administration, whoever the mayor is.
Yeah, because whatever she's doing is very effective in this case,
just her
right?
One no vote.
Yeah.
It's always easy to be a no vote.
Well,
no,
or abstention.
Yes.
Or abstention. So they delay almost all the votes that are first read for the next week. So they may vote on this next week, and we'll see whether or not there's enough. It has to have 5 votes to pass. I assume that it will pass. I don't think anybody's going to be upset enough about it to not pass it. I think it'll be a 6-1 vote, and it will all have forgotten about. This will be the dustbin of history at some point. But
I think the thing that stands out to me about this the most is the, you know, when the complaint was lodged or when she wrote this very soapboxish letter about, you know, what she stands for and that kind of stuff and demanding that the mayor apologize, et cetera. And Fred Richardson chimed in as well that they had no way of knowing. They had no way to know that this was real or not. There is this thing called the telephone. I've got one. In fact, I have the mayor's number in my phone.
Yeah, I do too.
I guarantee I could call him and ask him, hey, what is this deal? I mean, what this shows to me is that, especially when it comes to Bess and Fred, there's just no conversation at all with Stimson. And, you know,
that runs two ways, though.
Well, it is, but I mean, he was down there with with a council member. There was a council member who knew this, and in fact,
and a council member who defended him after the fact.
Right, and in fact, he said, CJ said, he told the people there that it was ceremonial, that it was a this.
Well,
was
it
was
not, that the council that, needed to be
the
involved.
Council needed to be involved, and so I don't, you know, I'm not. You know, I wrote in Sunday Brunch that if the mayor needed council approval for this and didn't get it, then yeah, he's out of line. But I also said, same time, I kind of wonder if that's the case, because I had a feeling we're going to come back to the end of this and find out that it was very political, and that it's Fred and
it comes down to credit again. Well, like everybody wants credit.
Fred and Bess have been doing this now for 4 years. They have been ping ponging stuff off of each other for 4 years just to get, you know, when they want to get after Sandy for something. I mean, I'm not saying the mayor's perfect, and I'll be happy to take him to task for things that I think he's doing wrong. But this concept of getting,
and we
this,
have with the way that they handled property,
sure,
yeah,
yeah, and I mean, I think the thing that say that you that this ceremonial signing, which is more or less just a PR event, yes,
it's exactly what it is.
But it's one that the council member from that district wanted as well. And I don't think it was a big, I guess to me, it just would suggest that, you know, if you were irritated to begin with and you wondered why it was happening, the concept of saying, we don't know, how could we possibly know? It would be pretty easy to find out.
Yeah. And I think Gina Gregory and LaVon were both clearly irritated by what appeared to be grandstanding by the part of at least a couple of the candidates, at least one candidate for sure. I think LaVon made the comment that we've got plenty of signs outside.
Yeah.
Let's not bring the signs inside.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I thought that was an interesting remark, but that's where we are.
So when you're talking about the race, the signs inside and outside, you did a little work too this week on where they are financially. I've talked about this before a few weeks ago, but you got an update. Where are they? Where are the mayoral races at this point?
I mean, we're still not. It's still not anything real exciting. Like it's been still a really slow municipal election cycle. But Sandy Stimson, the incumbent, is just raising money hand over fist compared to the other two, with Municipal Judge Carlos Finley and Councilman Richardson, pretty close in the fundraising, or at least as far as cash on hand goes. We looked at the early June reports. These all come from like the second or third of June, and so cash on hand, I think you had 14 grand for Richardson, you had a little over 15 grand for Judge Finley, and then you just had over $1 million for Stimson.
Right.
Stimson's put out a TV ad, so he's obviously also spending that money.
So both Finley and Richardson, when you interviewed them, are kind of nonplussed by this whole situation. They say, hey, the money doesn't matter. Ashley, do you think the money matters? Does it matter in this kind of race?
What country do we live in?
I mean, I mean,
if you're going to buy advertising and have fun, you know, have events and all that kind of stuff, it does matter. And also, it just shows your level of support. And I think it also shows the inevitable who everyone thinks is the inevitable winner, you know, because that's where they throw their money.
Right.
Yeah. Because they won't think it curries favor, but, you know.
Let me
not saying it does, but that's what businesses do.
Let me kind of play devil's advocate because I mostly agree with you, but I think the mindset is for a lot of candidates now with social media is that they can get their message out in a multitude of ways, and they don't think they need the newspaper, they don't think they need TV ads or anything like that. But in my experience and in our reporting, I think that it will bear out that the candidate with the most money and the biggest support usually wins. I think Fred Richardson said that money isn't votes, and he's right. It's not votes, but it gets your message out there in a variety of ways that if you don't have money, that doesn't work.
Well, when I look at their Facebook posts and their Twitter and things like that, I also don't see big numbers of people commenting or forwarding or sharing. The one who's getting the most shares and comments also is Stimson.
Right. And that's picked up a little bit for Finley in recent days, because he did, you know, he did this whole, he had a busy, busy Saturday and Friday night this last week. So that's been picking up for him, but you're absolutely right. Still, Stimson's still got the kind of the goods when it comes to that as well.
Have we heard anything on debates? Are they going to have a debate?
There is a forum coming up.
There's a forum coming up right before my vacation, y'all. but I will be going to that. That's an easy one to get in.
I don't know that that's necessarily a debate.
It might be a situation where they come in at different times.
I believe it is. I don't think it's an actual debate. But
I'm sure there'll be one debate, but we got to wait. It'll be, we probably won't see a debate until
late July, early August.
After the qualifying period has ended. The qualifying period, it seems like you only have officially a month between.
And I think now there are officially 97 people running for city council, right?
And 90 of those are in District 2.
Yeah, there's a bunch of people.
District 1 as well.
Really picked up. CJ Small is the only one at this point who does not have it.
As far as I'm, and look, if you're a listener and you know of somebody in District 3 that's running, Dale@lanyapmobile.com, let me know.
Every time we say there's somebody who's not running, then we wait a minute. These people, there's a lot of people who still are announcing by not telling.
I'm not clairvoyant, guys. I can't just assume
there are people who are making announcements in not very public ways. But it is, there's still some coming in. You've got another interview this week with somebody.
I just finished an interview with District 4 candidate. That's fine. And then there's Every time I turn around, there's somebody new.
Yep.
I should have put them all together instead of doing them one by one.
It's a learn, man. It's been a lot.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back to talk a little bit about Philip Rivers with Tommy Hicks just a minute.
This is Dr. Ron Swain, Jr. with the Premier Medical Group. As the only fellowship-trained sinus surgeon in Mobile, I would love the opportunity to discuss the most up-to-date treatments for your nasal and sinus complaints. Call my office to schedule an appointment at 251-473-1900 or visit the website mobileentdr.com. Be sure to check out my podcast, The Swain Sinus Show. I look forward to seeing you.
Hero Sports Bar and Grill now open 7 days a week at both locations. Ask about our new hot wings. The Singapore Sting and the Nature Boy. Woo! Come have a clipper at Heroes, Mobile's own since 1998. Heroes Sports Bar and Grill now offers curbside 7 days a week. Call 433-HERO for Dolphin Street or 341-WING for Hillcrest. Try our kick-ass spinach and crawfish dip. And thanks for supporting Heroes, a Mobile original since 1998.
And we're back. I've been waiting for this interview, by the way, because I'm kind of excited about the whole concept of Philip Rivers coming here and coaching. And you know, I don't know much about Philip other than just watching him play football, but I don't know a lot about his personality off the field. But you got a chance to sit down with.
And you've been teasing this interview in the newsroom for weeks. Yeah. So we were all excited. Dadgummit,
we got it.
Yeah.
It's only about 10,000 words.
I cut a few here and there.
But tell us a little bit about sitting down with the new coach at St. Michael.
Well, it was good. I mean, he's the same nice guy that everybody has kind of portrayed him as throughout his career. He was really very gracious with his time, and no subjects were off limits. Just go ahead and have a chat. And so we did. He really came off as somebody who, if I was coming up right now, I'd want my kid to play for him. You just get that feeling that this is a guy who knows what he's talking about, obviously, because he spent 17 years in the NFL, but also he comes from a background where his father was a high school coach. So he understands how you mold kids as well as develop kids. And I think that's going to be one of the really big factors that plays in his favor there, as that school really young, just getting off the ground, really. He's a perfect guy for them to come and help build things and build that football program and then the athletic program from there. So
it just seems to me like this is almost like a pipe dream. Like somebody, we're going to start this new Catholic school and – And, you know, they're sitting around talking and somebody says, hey, you know what? Why don't we see if Philip Rivers will coach our team?
Yeah.
You mean that guy that's in the NFL right now? Mm-hmm. Let's see if he can do it. You know, like, how do you get there?
Well, first of all, he has to want to be there.
Right.
And that was really the key to landing him there. It's my understanding they have his family has a home on the panhandle of Florida. I don't know exactly where, but somewhere in the panhandle. And during trips in the summers when they would be down there, he knew some families here, or they had met some families that were from St. Michael's. I said, hey, why don't you come over and just take a look? We're having like a camp or something. And he got involved with the kids because he's a very devout Roman Catholic. Yes. And this is a Catholic school. So that combination worked very well for him. So he came over and met some people and just kind of liked, they showed him what the plans were for the school as it grows. And I think he felt real comfortable with that. And this is something he always wanted to do. He said he was not interested in college coaching or anything like that. He wanted to be a high school coach like his father. And it just like was just a luck kind of thing on one hand that those two people, the guy who wanted to be a high school coach and a high school looking for a coach, kind of came together. And he kept coming over, and they eventually invited him over and talked to him formally about it. And he said, yeah, let's do it. That's what I want to do. So
it's a pretty fascinating story.
St. Michael's 1A, is that what they are right now?
I believe they are 1A. I don't have it in front of me.
So they would probably play like St. Luke's.
They'll play a 1A schedule or a 2A schedule. They may be 2A in football, but I'm not sure.
But they've got a brand new.
They're higher than that.
Yeah,
because they're playing like Vigor and Wiggins. So they're going to be a 4A school in football.
Yeah. Oh wow.
Yeah, and they've got all
it's
brand
based
new
on enrollment and all of that.
Yeah. I wonder how many kids have moved. I mean, parents and people have moved over there to put their kids to play for them.
Well, I mean, all over the county. Look, I mean, they got college coaches popping up at all the schools in Baldwin County.
Yeah, that's true. That's not unusual at this point in Baldwin County.
Not anymore.
I mean, you got Chase Smith, who used to be the offensive line coach at South, is at Orange Beach. You've got at Gulf Shores, they've got four former college coaches on staff. So
it is something else. I mean, Philip Rivers, if you follow NFL at all, he's a top quarterback for a long time. You know, this is a guy who would always be mentioned as somebody who could lead a team into the playoffs, maybe even to a Super Bowl. He never made it to a Super Bowl, but he's certainly a quality quarterback. I mean, he certainly had the caliber to do that. I think. You know, one guy can't win at all, Tom Brady. But he's definitely that kind of quarterback. He's a great quarterback, and it's just kind of amazing to think that I'm sure it has an effect. People are like, we could go down here and play somewhere else, or you could go play for that guy who was in the NFL for 17 years.
Yeah. That certainly doesn't hurt them when they're trying to attract students to their school and student athletes.
They'll be just fine, especially with brand new facilities.
They got a new field house.
They're going to have a
new
stadium.
Field house right now that has the weight room. And when you walk into that field house, to your right, there's an artist rendering of all of this, of the football stadium that's coming, baseball stadium, softball fields that are all going to be right there on the property. And he talked to me. I asked him about that. I said, you know, you're a young school. I mean, you're going to be a draw in a large way. I said, but when kids come in, they get this brand new building and they look up and they see what else is coming. You know, he said, yeah, that really helps us when they're sitting there and they're training and all that, and you bring them in and they see that, they see what's coming. They say, man, I want to be here because I want to be one of the first people to play on that field.
I'm sure there's going to be some serious Catholic school jealousy going on before long after they see all that. It's going to be those facilities may outstrip McGill's pretty soon.
It's going to look good. It's going to look really good. But McGill's got great facilities.
Yeah, they do.
This is all going to be right there, the football field.
That's the difference.
Do you think is going to start a trend overall, though? Like, say, when Terry Curtis or Steve Mask retires, they'll
They're going after Drew Brees?
Yeah, we'll have to get at least get a college coach or something like that, you know?
Hey, Drew Brees has walk-ons, so
we have AJ McCarron can come back. AJ and Jake Coker.
Yeah. I mean, there's I don't know what I mean. Obviously, I'm sure that Philip Rivers has more money than he would ever need. I don't know what level.
I think he's going
to
be all right.
Yeah, yeah, I think he'll do okay. I don't know what level they have to pay a high school coach at
I don't think Michael. That's an issue.
I'm sure it's not an issue, but he seems to me like, just from the interview, that it does mesh with everything he's into. You know, those things work for him. And I think, obviously, the Catholic school thing played a big role as well.
A really big role. That really is the reason it brought him there, because he believed what they believed and what was going on. He was looking for a place to land. And I even asked him, I said, what made this the right spot? And not, say, like a larger high school or even in a bigger city.
Yeah.
And he said, look, this is what I want to do. I want to teach kids. He didn't really want to come to a program. He said, look, if you go to a program, he didn't mention this by name, let's just use this, like Thompson that wins all the time, or Valdosta or someplace. If you go there, it's been done before.
Right.
It's expected. He said, here, you get to start out. I'm new. I'll grow with the program. Yeah. I'm going to be a better coach in 5 years than I am right now because I'm going to learn, because I don't know right now. I'm still learning. So I think it's a great thing to have him here in this area. And it's certainly going to be a big plus for St. Mark.
Well, it's a great interview, and it's a lot of fun to read. You have a couple other things. We got a couple more minutes left here in the segment, but you got some other big news this week. You got a UMS player who becoming Mr. Baseball.
Yep. Pitcher Maddox Bruns, who had a great year. His numbers were unbelievable. He had like 160 something strikeouts and like 49 innings.
A lefty with a 95 mile an hour fastball and a good curve.
Yeah, 95, and he's touched 97, 98.
Yeah.
He's gonna be just fine. Yeah. He's already a signee with Mississippi State. But he likely is not going to end up there. Great likelihood he'll be a first-round pick in the July Major League Baseball draft. So it's great for him. And the All-State teams came out, and we had a ton of people. I'll try to knock them out real quick. Bruns, aside from being Mr. Baseball, was the Player of the Year and the Pitcher of the Year in Class 5A. In 4A, Mobile Christian's Charlie Keller was the Player of the Year, and Grant Jay of Mobile Christian was the Hitter of the Year. John Malone of Bayshore Christian was the 1A Player of the Year. In softball, you had Aaliyah Johnson of Fairhope was the Pitcher of the Year in 7A. Ainsley Lambert of Spanish Fort was the Pitcher of the Year in 6A. And we had two Coaches of the Year in 5A, Gene Darr, which was Satsuma, and in 2A, Shane Alexander with Orange Beach. So we wrapped up we had the five state champions from this area in softball and baseball, and you know, the All-State teams kind of reflected all of that. And also this week, Paige Madden, at Virginia, another UMS. UMS is doing a lot of good things these days, or having people from the school do a lot of good things. Paige is at the Olympic trials. She finished second to Katie Ledecky in the 400-meter freestyle the other night. As we tape this on Wednesday, she is scheduled to race again against Ledecky and others in the 200-meter. But it seems a lock that Paige will be a member of the Olympic team, which is
fantastic.
That's great for this area.
Yeah, I was watching a little bit of those trials last night, watching some of the swimming, and it's one of my favorite things to watch in the Olympics.
Yeah,
I love terrific. Watching swimming.
Freestyle is my favorite stroke, by the way.
And then two other things to watch this weekend. One, Robbie Shelton of Wilmer, former University of Alabama and St. Paul's standout. He is in the field of the U.S. Open, so maybe keep an eye on him, see how he does. And also Tanner Allen, again, UMS, here we go again. He's with Mississippi State, and they'll be playing in the College World Series starting this weekend there. First game is Sunday at 6, I believe, against Texas.
I thought this was supposed to be the dull part of the year for sports.
Yeah, well, they don't really have those anymore.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, thank you, Tommy. We're going to take another break, and we'll be back for the third bizarre segment of Magnapod in just a moment.
This is Dr. Ron Swain, Jr. with the Premier Medical Group. As the only fellowship-trained sinus surgeon in Mobile, I would love the opportunity to discuss the most up-to-date treatments for your nasal and sinus complaints. Call my office to schedule an appointment at 251-473-1900 or visit the website mobileentdr.com. Be sure to check out my podcast, The Swain Sinus Show. I look forward to seeing you.
Heroes Sports Bar and Grill now open 7 days a week at both locations. Ask about our new hot wings, the Singapore Sting and the Nature Boy. Woo! Come have a clipper at Heroes, Mobile's own since 1998. Heroes Sports Bar and Grill now offers curbside 7 days a week. Call 433-HERO for Dolphin Street or 341-WING for Hillcrest. Try our kick-ass spinach and crawfish dip. And thanks for supporting Heroes, a Mobile original since 1998.
And we are back. Seemed like we were gone for a long time, didn't it? For a long time.
Yes.
Yeah.
So,
forever and ever, amen.
And we have a new sponsor this week we ought to thank.
Thank you.
Yes.
We've got to thank Dr. Ron Swain with Premier Medical.
Yes. So
thank you,
joining,
Dr. Swain.
Joining Heroes as a sponsor for Lagnipod. So, you know, that's nice. It's good to have him here. So one of the things that is heating up, and it's kind of strange because it's still over a year away, is the U.S. Senate race. We had the announcement of Katie Boyd Britt.
Yes. She is so, very energetic.
Yes.
I won't say young woman. She's not that young.
She looks young, but
she looks young. Yes. Yeah, I, in fact, looked up how old she was because I was like, is she 12? But she is 38. So.
Yeah. I mean, she
38's does, not that old.
No, but I mean, she does look. I mean, the pictures of her, I say, I'm like, gosh, she looks like she's in her mid 20s.
Yeah.
She is very youthful looking for 38, which is still, in my world, it's young too. But,
right.
But yeah, so I mean, what do you think about that? I mean, she's a former chief of staff for Richard Shelby. She got his endorsement immediately, and you have a column about it this week. Jeff Poor also writes about it this week,
right?
I'm
sure Jeff and I have totally different takes on it. I think Jeff thinks Mae Brooks is going to win, and it's not going to even be a contest. I tend to disagree with that. I think it's going to be at least closer than he thinks, but. Just because there are so many people who know just by looking at the math that a Democrat is going to have a very hard time winning unless someone is picking up girls at the mall when they're 13.
Right.
And they're going to vote for the person who is less far right. And that will, and she will, I don't think Blanchard has had much traction. And unless someone else that we don't know about yet, which very well could happen, Britt's going to be, and she's Shelby's heir apparent. So,
well, Blanchard she's a far right person. She's a Trump supporter, a hardcore Trump supporter. Had a fundraiser with him, I believe.
So
there's not a lot to differentiate her and Mo Brooks. If you like Trump, if you're,
I mean, like still, I said in my column. The man is accused of inciting an insurrection for Trump. There's really not much more.
Right. He's proven it. He's left the blood on the field.
Yes. He has. Yeah. Yes.
So, I mean, you're right. So it does make that point of saying, well, you know, if you don't want to, if you're tired or not interested in the Trump revival of any sort, or not interested, if you're a Republican who feels like that whole part
of just tired of it.
If the Trump thing feels like it has left you from the party, Britt is probably where you go, right?
Yeah, she's definitely like the business Chamber of Commerce, side candidate.
Let's say you're a hardcore Democrat and you were looking back at the history of what we've done in the last 5 years or so, would this not be somewhat, and I'm not trying to accuse Mo Brooks of having the same issues as our former Supreme Court justice, but if you got Roy Moore, when you had Roy Moore running against the establishment candidate, who was
Strange had a lot of baggage. I mean, everybody was creeped out more about the Bentley stuff I don't think you can really compare those two situations.
I mean, that's the thing. What I was going to ask. Do you think as a Democrat, if you're sitting here,
I read your mind before
but I'm just saying, if you're a Democrat, are you thinking, I've got to figure out which one of these is the weakest candidate to, are you going to vote in the primaries to try to vote Republican in the primaries in hopes that you select the one who's the weakest one.
I don't think that's enough to make a difference.
I don't think that's a good strategy, because then you're going to end up with, you could end up with the person that's not great for the state, I mean, instead of the person who, you know,
I will say that better. I talk to people, you know, I definitely talk to people back when Luther and Roy were running, who were absolutely voting for Roy Moore to take down Luther Strange so that they could vote for Doug Jones.
Yeah, I mean, but that was such a unique situation there. You know, I just don't think that this race, and I think there will still be Democrats who, whoever the candidate is, they're going to vote for that. I think it's your more centrist that are going to say, I don't want Mo Brooks to win, and pragmatically, a Republican's going to win this seat. So I love my Democratic Party, but I'm going to vote for the more moderate Republican.
Right, and here's the thing too. I don't think that Richard Shelby has lost his grip on the what the state does. If y'all keep talking about 2017, but if y'all remember, he said he wouldn't vote for Roy Moore, and Doug Jones ended up winning. Right. Does he have that same kind of pull with his former, what was it, chief of staff, I think?
Yeah.
Katie Britt was?
Yeah.
So does he still have that kind of pull? Because he already said that he would vote for her.
Right.
He's endorsed her.
Yeah. He's fully endorsed her.
Well, here's another question. So does a really weak Democratic candidate help Katie Britt a lot?
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, that's what it would seem to me. It seems to me that if you have a very weak, if you have a Democratic candidate who everybody's looking at saying, no chance, this person is not going to beat Mo Brooks or Katie Britt. And I'm a Democrat. Don't you vote for Britt?
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And here's the thing with the Democratic Party in this state, and it is getting stronger by the day, but with the Democratic Party the way it is in this state, you don't have to say a weak Democrat candidate, just say a Democratic candidate.
Well, but when you had Doug Jones, there was an attractive candidate.
Yes. Yes.
And, you know,
and the state party did everything they could to alienate him.
And everyone says Chris England is going to be the Democratic candidate, and he's a very strong candidate.
He is. So. You're right. You're right. I don't think he's strong enough, at least not yet.
It's just the math of the rural counties.
Rough shot. Absolutely.
Well, speaking of candidates, we had a candidate here locally, or connection with a local connection, who won a big race the other day. Wasabi,
the Pekingese,
won the Westminster Dog Show, and apparently has there's some ownership connection here in Fairhope, is what we understand. Yes, is that correct?
Yes. So I guess it's more like owning a horse. Like there are multiple owners for these show dogs.
Is Bob Baffert involved in this in any way, shape, or form?
We have not gotten Wasabi's.
Are you saying Wasabi's
performance?
You're saying he's juiced. Was the person who was prancing with Wasabi, juiced?
He looked pretty juiced. One of Wasabi's owners is the sister of Mac McAleer, who is the Krispy Kreme heir. Her name is...
he's the guy who decided to put the hole in the donut, right?
I think he was involved with the hot donut thing. But his sister,
nice guy, I've met him before. Really nice
his sister is one of the owners, and she lives in Fairhope. So naturally, we're going to claim. Even though I believe Wasabi lives in Pennsylvania, I'm sure he summers in Fairhope. Like all
is Wasabi a he? Or
I believe
she?
It's a he. Yes.
I mean, I'm no expert on Pekingese, but they're not my favorite type of dog. But you know,
no.
God bless him. He was a pretty shaggy looking dog.
He got a lot of bad press. I feel sorry for poor Wasabi. I mean, BuzzFeed read an article that said this thing won the Westminster Dog Show.
Yeah, that's a little rough. Yeah. There was also some thing about cultural misappropriation.
Yes,
right?
Apparently. Yes. People on Twitter were angered because a white person owned a Chinese dog and named it after a Japanese condiment.
Yes.
Well, there's a lot of confusion in that.
Should he have been
statement.
Like hot mustard instead? Would that have been okay? Would it have been culturally okay? I don't know. So, yes, there's that.
But John Berman, the CNN anchor, went on this like insane rant about it too, about how labs and golden retrievers should be
the only ones.
Well, they had never won, and this inbred Pekingese has won 5 times. I was like, that
a lab
sounds
has
a
never
little
won?
That's what he
Well,
claimed.
The best dog ever is a border collie, so y'all can come at me. Dale at Lanyatmobile.com.
The standard poodle would be my choice, but they won last year. Right, right. So.
Well, the pit rat is not.
Gotta think about Remy.
You know, I'm a fan of the mutt.
But, right,
you know,
me too.
I don't know, but anyway, poor Wasabi.
Well, we have, you know, I have a new member of my household who is a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel, and those are also fancy type of dogs like that. But my dog has a one of her lips has brown hair on it, so completely DQ'd from this. Yeah, it's just not breed standard. I mean, wow.
As Wasabi's handler said, he has sparkle. You have to have sparkle.
Yeah, he did. There's no doubt.
And his great-grandfather also won, so he's a legacy.
Oh, my goodness.
Malachi.
All right, well, this is starting to
Malachi. Make all their money.
Malachi.
I know way too much about this stupid
Children
dog.
Of the Corn.
The reluctant dust mop is the reluctant someone dust.
Poor Wasabi. Well, congratulations, but, Wasabi. Yeah. I feel like what this is going out to
I think
you
his and, mother's name is Sushi, by the way.
Well, oh, this is Our just... Father. This is just too much. I mean, they need to get this straight.
Now, suddenly
out.
I want sushi for dinner.
He should be General Tao Chicken next year, but whatever.
Yeah.
All right, enough of the silliness. We will be back with y'all next Thursday. Have a great week.
Bye.
The Lagnapod is a Something Extra Publishing production. Executive producers are Rob Holbrook and Ashley Charles. Music is by Sun Pulse Sound and Electro Animals. Only subscribers like you have access to this podcast. Tell your friends they can sign up at my.lanyatmobile.com. For advertising opportunities, please call 251-450-4466.